Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 7, Blackfoot Messiah. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Penny, Jim Carlin, Peter Stray, Elizabeth Demery, James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Dylan Lynch, Kate Torrey, James Konacek, Andy Clements, and Jeff Baker. Preacher had to go east to travel west when he decided to accept an assignment from the U.S. Army. Times had been lean for a while now. Trapping was a thing of the past. Only a handful of men clung to the old ways, trapping and trading pelts to a market with little demand. But not so the legend called Preacher. Wisely, he had salted away ample gold and silver coin, even invested some, most recently in what sounded to many like a fool's venture, Mr. Fulton's Steamboat Works. As the smoke-belching paddle-wheelers proliferated, so did Preacher's profits. Although 10 years of only investment income had severely drained his reserve, he could no more leave the high lonesome than so many of the other mountain men, which meant he had to take whatever he could get to stay in supplies and keep afloat. Thus it was that he grudgingly considered accepting a commission from the War Department to act as trail guide and scout for a regiment of dragoons. Preacher read again the letter that accompanied the commissioning papers that had yet to see his signature.
Word has come out of the Northern Rocky Mountains of the unorganized territory that the Blackfoot are gathering in great numbers. The savages are being agitated by some holy man who claims to have the way to bring back the white buffalo and drive the white men out of the plains forever. It is vital in these unsettled times to secure our northern flank. A conflict with Mexico seems imminent, and our nation could ill afford an Indian uprising when our attention shall be directed southward. To which purpose, it is the decision of the Secretary to dispatch a battalion of dragoons to the area of the Bighorn Mountains in the northeast part of the territory to serve as a presence in the area. The battalion is to depart Jefferson Barracks in Missouri and proceed up the Missouri to the North Platte River, and from there into the high country of Wyoming, where they will establish a fort. The purpose of this post will be to oversee the Blackfoot from a discreet distance and to show the flag to the Cheyenne and Sioux.
What a stupid idea. That'll only cause trouble where there's none now. What's got in old Quincy's head? Preacher was referring to Quincy Vickers, an old friend who had become a civilian advisor for the Army. I mean, he's lived out here and trapped, and he knows the Injuns. Maybe it ain't his idea at all.
Knowing the striped pants crowd from past experience, Preacher was well aware of their propensity for overreaction and, well, for stupidity. He was to sign the papers and to take them to Bent's Fort, where 2 copies would be sent by fast messenger to Jefferson Barracks in Washington City. There, he would pick up the first installment of the fee offered him.
Well, here we go. Damn.
Preacher picked up a quill pen and dipped it into his ink pot. With meticulous care, he signed his name. Preacher knew he'd be busy all summer, most like. He curled the dally of the lead rope of his pack horse around the overlarge horn of the Mexican saddle and swung atop Thunder.
Well, Thunder, we'd best be eating miles. Army told me I could hire up to 4 men at $3 a day. I reckon I can find some companionable fellers down Bent's Fort way to accompany me on this commission, as they call it.
Big Nose Harper and his sidekick, Algernon Bloor, had gotten roaring, stumbling, falling down, crapping their drawers drunk the previous night. Now, some 7 hours later, they still weren't faring much better. Still too soaked in alcohol to suffer hangovers, they nevertheless sought some hair of the dog. Their source, no matter how ill-advised, was William Nifty Bates, who had recently opened a trading post and a road ranch saloon at the summit of Trout Creek Pass. Now, Nifty was frankly afraid of Big Nose. Big Nose Harper was a bear of a man, with a barrel chest, long, thick arms, tree trunk legs, and his most memorable feature, which gave him his nickname, an overlarge nose that had been smeared all over his face. He held in contempt all shopkeepers, to which subspecies he considered Nifty Bates belonged, and he went out of his way to make their lives miserable.
This whiskey tastes like frog pee. You watering it down again, you cheat?
No, not at all, Mr. Harper.
I say you're watering it, and my name's Big Nose.
No, I'm not, Mr. Big Nose.
Are you making fun of my honker?
Oh, no. You told me to call you Big Nose.
I never said no such thing. Any man calls me that's looking for a killing. A panty waist like you's good for a knuckle drubbing.
A shadow fell across the toes of the boots worn by Big Nose, cast by a figure that filled the doorway.
Why don't you pick on someone near your own size, Big Nose? Or should I call you Blubber Ass?
Harper spun to face his detractor.
Who in hell are you?
They call me Preacher.
Folks say he's a mean one, Big Nose.
Shut up, Algy.
Algernon Bloor was a few biscuits shy of a plateful, so no one really ever paid much attention to what he had to say. Big Nose sized up Preacher and found him wanting. Whiskey had so clouded his reasoning that he failed to see the hard, deadly glint in the gray eyes of the raw-boned man in the doorway.
Now, if you'll oblige me by getting the hell out of here, I'll have another drink. Barkeep, make it snappy.
Emboldened by the presence of Preacher, Nifty Bates took a stand.
No, sir. You've had too much. The bar is closed to you.
Harper cut his eyes to Algy. Surprise registered on both their faces. No man had ever spoke to Big Nose Harper that way before. Big Nose reached across the plank bar and balled the front of Bates' shirt in both hands. With a yank that looked effortless, and was, he hauled the proprietor off his feet and across the bar. Taking quick steps, Big Nose Harper crossed the room and threw Nifty Bates out into the dusty dooryard.
I say who drinks and who doesn't around here.
Like hell you do.
Big Nose whirled and then took a wild swing at Preacher's chin.
Yeah!
Preacher pulled his head back a few inches and let the big knuckles fly past. Dull-witted Algy Bloor decided this was a good time to get some licks in on Preacher and win favor from his pal. Bloor got a solid kick to the beans. He flew backward and smashed into the bar. By then, Big Nose had rallied. Preacher backpedaled and swung a short, hard right to the face of Harper. Big Nose's most prominent feature got a lot bigger. Preacher followed with a left hook that snapped Harper's jaw shut. A second later, arms and legs twined around Preacher from behind. Always a sneak, though not bright enough to profit by it, a somewhat recovered Algy Bloor maneuvered to where he could leap onto Preacher's back.
I got him, Big Nose! I got him!
Instead of struggling, Preacher simply flexed his knees and rammed himself backward into a 6x6 upright that supported part of the roof.
My God! I think he broke my back!
You'll get over it!
Harper charged at Preacher. Always obliging, Preacher stepped away from the post and let Algy fall limply to the floor. Fresh rage welled up inside Harper, and he reached for a knife. A shaft of sunlight through the open doorway made the keen edge a streak of fire. Harper advanced on Preacher, who produced his green river.
Time to bleed, boy.
When Harper lunged, Preacher cut him across the back of the hand. The knife fell from pain-filled fingers. Preacher kicked it aside. Preacher whirled to find a revived Algy Bloor hurtling at him, a knife extended in one hand. Preacher parried and sidestepped. Preacher kicked Bloor's feet out from under the slightly built ferret-faced man, and Bloor went sprawling on the plank floor. Preacher paused to take stock. Both men looked fairly well whipped. Big Nose Harper stood, slope-shouldered, his head bowed. He tried clumsily to wrap a bandana around his wounded hand. Preacher strode to the bar and pulled a beer for himself.
Preacher, look out!
Preacher spun on one heel to see Algie Bloor pull a long, single-barrel cap-lock pistol from his waistband. Enraged beyond caution by the swift death of his partner, Big Nose Harper dragged out a pair of double-barreled pistols.
I told you you were gonna bleed, boy.
Ears ringing from the confined detonations, Preacher examined his handiwork. Thick layers of powder smoke undulated in the cool interior of the saloon. Nifty Bates walked over to Preacher and wrung his hand.
I ain't never seen such fancy shooting in my born days. Drinks are on the house, Preacher. Dinner, too. This pair's been nothing but a misery and torment to me the past 3 days.
Up in the Blackfoot Mountains of Montana Territory, a huge gathering of warriors whooped it up around a large fire. The entire carcass of a bison, cut into quarters, turned on greenwood spits over separate cook fires. Off to one side, three Blackfoot braves handed out shiny new rifles from wooden crates at the back of a wagon. Each man gifted with one of these received a bag of 100 lead balls and a horn of powder. For the time being, they would not be given the percussion caps. The warriors stopped dancing and gathered in a wide semicircle around a startlingly white buffalo hide lodge. A young-looking man stepped out of the entrance and struck a pose before him. Although in his mid-30s, he had the look of a man in his early 20s. His coppery face was elastic and unlined. He wore ankle-high moccasins, beaded and quilled in traditional Blackfoot design, a knee-length loincloth, and an abbreviated, soft, pliable elkskin hunting shirt. Over that was a most unusual item of garb, which lay in turn beneath a second, larger hunting shirt. Hairpipe bracelets adorned his forearms, and a breastplate of bison teeth, hairpipe beads, and brass cones covered his chest. He raised his arms above his head to command attention.
My brothers, there are many among you who say Iron Shirt is too young to make strong medicine. You say that I have been a medicine man for only 10 winters, yet I say to you that I have the strongest medicine. I received it in a vision when I visited among the Paiute. My spirit guide appeared to me and showed me a hidden valley. The spirit pointed to a low mound. He said these words to me. Dig here. You will find the power of white buffalo. You will learn the ways of making the medicine that will bring back white buffalo and drive the white eyes from our land forever. I dug there, and I found what the spirit wanted for me. Then I was shown the dance we have just danced, and much more. It makes me safe from any white man's bullets. It will work for you also. The day is coming soon when the white man will fall to the earth like rain in the spring. I bring you rifles, the newest and best. Plenty of bullets, too. When you have finished the ritual of Iron Shirt, you will be stronger than any bullet.
You say the white man's bullets cannot harm you, Iron Shirt. Prove it, and we will follow you.
Iron Shirt looked at his detractor contemptuously for a moment, then forced an amiable expression onto his face.
I ask Bent Trees to step to the far side of the fire. Take your gun in hand and point it at my chest.
Bent Trees did as bidden. He got into position.
When I say so, shoot me. Now, Bent Trees.
A black hole appeared in the outer hunting wear worn by Iron Shirt, a split second before he violently rocked backward, his face twisted in pain. Several Blackfoot rushed forward. Iron Shirt held up a hand to stay them. Carefully, he reached into the hole and worked his fingers a moment. He came out with a flattened 60 caliber ball.
You will be shown the secret of this medicine when you complete the ritual to become part of my Iron Shield Strongheart Society. Death to all White Eyes!
Seated inside the lodge of Iron Shirt were three white men dressed as Blackfoot. One, Morton Gross, who had thinning, mousy brown hair and eyes that looked like chips of blue ice, smoked a cigar. All three looked inordinately pleased with the progress being made. The nominal leader of their cabal nodded to Gross.
It's fortunate that you have important friends in high places, Morton. Nice to get advance warning that a regiment of troops is on the way, and that it would be guided by an experienced frontiersman.
Morton Gross made light of his informant's importance.
He's only a clerk. The really important ones are so high up they don't dare make direct contact with us. But my informant was able to read the letter sent to the former mountain man, Preacher.
And now, if the men we sent to watch the Santa Fe Trail only do their job, our goal is in our hands.
When Preacher reached Bent's Fort, he encountered two old friends, Antoine Revier, a half-breed Delaware, and Three Sleeps Norris. Former mountain men who, like Preacher, could not leave the mountains after the fur trade collapsed, they moved like ghosts from one old haunt to another. Three Sleeps Norris burst out through the stockade gate with such animation the dust boiled up around his moccasins.
I'll be danged if it ain't Preacher. Still got his hair if he has grown a little pot belly.
Preacher dismounted and they embraced.
I ain't got a pot belly, and I keep my hair by staying on the watch for those who'd lift it. I will say that you've grown a mite rounder since I last saw you.
I ain't no rounder. It's these clothes.
Oh, yeah, of course it is. Anybody else around from the old bunch?
Antoine Revier is inside now. Also, Pap Jacobs is mended from a broke leg. Nobody else at home but a couple of stuffy soldier boys.
Yeah, they're waiting for me.
What? Preacher hanging with soldier boys?
Well, not exactly hanging. Got some papers for them to be delivered back in Washington City.
Couldn't be that you're signed up to actual work for the Army.
We'll talk about it later. Now I want to wash the trail dust out my throat.
Well, come on. Old Turner has a new spring house where he keeps his beer barrels. Like to crack your teeth, it's so cold.
The two men strode across the small parade ground to the front of the saloon. Preacher ordered himself a beer and some whiskey and sat down at a table in the plank-floored saloon. He drank contentedly from a large stein, which he used to chase swallows of some whiskey of dubious origin. He easily saw why his present companions preferred the beer. Across from him, Antoine Revier leaned toward Preacher. Beady black eyes glittered with merriment under Revier's thick mane of black hair and bushy brows.
Sacre nom, it is good to see you again, Preacher. When was the last time?
28 rendezvous, I recollect.
Antoine slapped a big hand on the tabletop.
You are right. It has been at least that long. What have you been doing of late? Met any other trappers?
Well, not in a while.
Three Sleeps Norris tapped the side of his long nose.
I don't mean to pry, but what brings you this far south, Preacher?
Like I said, Three Sleeps, I'll tell you later.
Before Preacher could be asked more, a grizzled mountain man, one not known by any of the three, entered the room. He nodded to the trio and crossed to the bar.
Whiskey, you hear the latest, Ransom?
The proprietor, Ransom Turner, glanced at the mountain man.
There's word on the wind that a wagon train of pilgrims have been led astray somewhere up to the northeast. They was last seen along the Platte River.
Evan Butler turned to include Preacher and his companions in the discussion.
What do you think, boys? I say we got more than enough Flatlanders shoving in around here. Present company accepted, of course, Ransom.
I say half of those who've come into the High Lonesome are more than enough, while them that don't want to tear up the sod and plant crops are Bible thumpers and psalm singers. Most of them can't button their own damn trousers of a morning without retraining, nor know which foot their boot goes on. Them lost pilgrims out there can rot for all I care.
Inside the engine hut, Quentin Prager arose from the fragrant pile of pine boughs on which he had slept and stretched his long, lean frame, toughened by years of living out of doors. He was of an age with Morton Gross, yet he knew himself to be in far better shape. Years as a mining engineer had conditioned him to sleeping on the ground, and for him, unlike the rotund Gross, Blackfoot bed of buffalo robes and boughs was a luxury. He reached down for his clothing. They would be moving on today with Iron Shirt's travel and medicine show, as Prager secretly called it. Three more bands of Blackfoot to visit, and they would go to the Cheyenne. Before long, they would have the entire frontier aflame. Over a rack of open pit-roasted bison ribs, Preacher finally acknowledged that his earlier assumption had been correct. He could not nursemaid a battalion of baby dragoons all the way to the Big Empty alone. He indeed needed someone to come along. So he began to fabricate an elaborate tale to spin for his friends.
Whoo! Damn, that was fun. Well, now that our bellies are full and we're feeling good, I'll tell you all about what I come here for. Three sleeps is right. I gave them papers to the soldier boys, and though it galls me to admit it, I done signed on for a job with the army. You see, there's this new form battalion of dragoons.
Preacher went on to describe what he expected to find when he reached Jefferson Barracks. After talking of the well-known hazards of the vastly unforgiving mountains, he concluded with his sales pitch.
Of course, I knowed right off that it was going to take men of courage and powerful wisdom to shepherd these green soldier boys to Wyoming. I'll have to be real careful and choosy as to who I pick.
Three Sleeps looked absolutely appalled.
Why, that's the stupidest thing I've heard. Greenhorns would be out there all alone. The nearest white settlement is more miles away than I can count, even if I take off my moccasins. Wyoming, that's plumb crazy.
Oh, I agree. No man in his right mind would pick that wild and woolly country for putting up a solitary fort. Of course, the government's going to pay in gold, and plenty of it. They wrote me that I could pay $3 gold a day for any who sign on.
$3?
Yeah, that's right. The way I see it, it'll take the entire summer to get the job done. That's going to come to a total of, $276.
Well now, they sure are very generous. Out here a man can live a whole year on that and have some left over. And it beats competing with a dozen other fellows over every dinky little bit of work that comes up. If you'll have me, Preacher, I think I'll come along.
What you said about the competition for jobs out here is right, Antoine. Seems as how Preacher's got himself into a bear cave the first day of spring. Might be a couple good fellers, like ourselves, could save his bacon for him. Count me in!
Preacher beamed at him with sincere gratitude.
Well, now that shines, boys. I've done seen the soldier boys already, and they took off lickety-split back east. We can light out first thing in the morning.
Night came swiftly on at the edge of the Wyoming Badlands of the Great Divide Basin. Eve Billings hugged herself with tired arms. They ached from driving a team of six mules all day. Only 2 days previously had they found a way out of the Medicine Bow Mountains. At least that's the range she guessed they had been in. Eve teetered on the verge of losing her battle with despair. She wondered how much more she could endure, how much more she could ask her children to take in stride. First, there had been the loss of her husband, killed a month and a half ago by a war party of Sauk and Fox in Iowa Territory. Next, their captain and his trail guide had led the wagon train into a blind canyon in the Medicine Bow Range. There the scoundrels had robbed and abandoned the settlers. When at last the party had found their way out of the mountains, this stark desert rolled over to the horizon to daunt them. There was scant water for the stock, what with the blister and heat, even though it was only the end of May. But there was a terrible chill at night. A thin sliver of moon hung in the east, while the western sky was washed in orange and magenta by the afterglow of sunset. Her eldest child, Charlie, came up to her and tugged at her apron as he had done as a babe.
Mom, Mama, I'm hungry. Anna is crying again and wants to eat too. What are we gonna have?
There's some bacon and a few potatoes left.
Ugh, the bacon's all green and slippery on the outside.
I'll trim it. That's all we have.
Why can't we just go back?
We can't, Charlie. It's 2 months' journey back to New York State. In 2 months, we'll be in the Oregon country. A new home, a new life.
I don't want a new home. I don't want a new life. Besides, who's gonna lead us to Oregon? Mr. Tate? Mr. Labette, they can't find their way to the outhouse.
That sort of talk will get your mouth washed out with soap, young man. You are not old enough to fail to show respect to your elders. Mr. Pruitt seems to know what he's doing. At least he can hitch his mules without someone showing him how to do it.
Big help that is.
Back to the wagon, Charlie.
Charlie sulked away. When Eve turned back, the stars shone brightly in the bowl of the sky.
Maybe tomorrow help will come.
24 naked Blackfoot warriors stood in a solemn rank on the bank of the Bighorn River. Before the men stood Iron Shirt, stripped of his loincloth and moccasins. He raised his bare arms above his head to capture the initiate's attention.
My brothers, you are about to learn the mysteries behind my great medicine. First, you must be purified. Part of that has already been accomplished in the sweat lodges. Now your fear of the white man's bullets must be washed from you so that you are reborn into the society of the Iron Shield Stronghearts.
Here Iron Shirt paused and stepped backward into the shallows of the river. His bare feet found purchase among the rocks that lined it. The water was aching cold, though he showed no effect. He beckoned with both arms to the first two in line.
Come forward into the water. Turn around and face your brothers.
Once in position, four of Iron Shirt's closest followers joined the Blackfoot. Tipping them backward, they lowered each candidate into the water until fully immersed. Iron Shirt raised one hand over each one in benediction.
I command all wickedness and fear to abandon you, for you to renounce the power of the white man's bullets, and I baptize you in the name of the three-faced God, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Arise, my brothers, in iron, and go forth to be warmed by the coals.
Obediently, the pair waded clear of the river and walked to where a long, narrow trench had been prepared. The air above it shimmered with distortion from the heat given off by a deep bed of coals. They stood near, letting the radiant waves warm their chilled bodies. While they did that, Iron Shirt continued until all the remaining initiates had been baptized. Then he joined them at the fire pit.
To walk safely through the blaze of the white man's bullets, you must first walk through this earthly fire. Prepare your bodies and spirits for this ordeal by praying to the Great Spirit for the strength of the sky legend, Firewalker. When you are ready, I will lead you across the abyss of flame.
Iron Shirt waited 100 heartbeats, then positioned himself at the lip of the trench. He stuck out one foot and made contact with the bed of coals. With a firm, unhurried tread, he walked the length of the shimmering embers. On the far side, he strode 10 paces from the pit and raised first one foot, then the other, to reveal not the least damage. The candidates followed close on his heels and emerged in the same condition until the 22nd man in line. The warrior leaped to one side, fell to the ground to reveal feet of cherry red hue, puffed and badly blistered.
You have not yet enough faith. Go and have Red Elk dress those feet with bear grease. Know that you did not gain dishonor for your failure. When your faith grows stronger, come again and make the sacrifice that you may join us.
When the injured man had been helped from sight, Iron Shirt gestured to the others.
Come, my brothers of Iron Shield, gather round. It is time for me to reveal the mystery of my medicine's power.
The engines complied, eager as small boys around a strange animal. Iron Shirt reached down and pulled up the hem of his outer hunting shirt. It revealed a complete set, front and back, of chain mail. Although dented in places and rusty in other spots, its sturdy construction and latent protection awed them all. Iron Shirt turned slowly so they could examine the all-encasing war garment, then lowered his shirt and retrieved his loincloth and moccasins. The initiates did likewise.
And would you now like to test your power? To the south and west of us, there can be found many rolling lodges of the whites. We shall ride there and kill them all, and not one of us will fall.
They had circled the wagons for the night. Asa Wharton peered out into the darkness and marveled at what fools they had been.
Oh, Lord, to believe that we could make our way to the Oregon country on our own should be enough to put us in the asylum. We are too far north. We always have been.
It had been as much Ace's fault as anyone else's. Worse, his voice had been one of the loudest, insisting that the brothers not bring along any firearms.
We are the children of God. We must show that we come in peace. A lot of good that will do. There are Indians out in the hills all around us. I can feel it in my bones.
Asa strongly doubted the savages would spend much time listening to anything they had to say. For the first time since childhood, Asa Wharton wondered what it would be like to die. He shuddered when he recalled the hoof prints he had seen in the loose soil. He had been riding ahead of the slow-moving wagons when he came upon them. They angled down one slope and crossed the trail. From there, they disappeared over the ridge to the south. By the time the first wagon arrived, a stiff breeze had wiped out any sign of them. He hadn't told the others about them. He didn't want to create panic. And now he feared it was too late. The bloody point of an arrow protruded from Asa's chest. Blackness engulfed him. Iron Shirt's band fell upon the unsuspecting wagon train like a storm. The only shots fired came from the rifles in the hands of the Blackfoot. They had devastating effect. 7 men fell in seconds after the death of Asa Wharton. The tomahawks and war clubs they slammed into the helpless whites huddled beyond the fire. Iron Shirt stood back and watched with growing satisfaction. Given another moon, he would have an invincible force. Cheyenne would join him, and the Sioux would be next. Then he would deal with the white men who masqueraded as Blackfoot. After that, he would run the war against all whites his own way. When the last white died, Iron Shirt came forward. A quick check showed him that there had been no survivors. Better still, the Blackfoot took no losses. Early the next morning, Preacher and his companion set out together along the North Fork of the Santa Fe Trail. Hard-packed and rutted from much past use, it let them make good time. Near mid-morning, they came upon a pack horse trader. He had 3 animals on a lead. Their pack saddles were heaped with tin pots and pans, shielded tin lanterns. One was also loaded with pattern-pressed panels for ceilings. He hailed the trio enthusiastically.
Howdy, fellers! Good to see a friendly face. I'd be obliged if you'd ride along a spell. You're more than welcome.
Preacher considered it odd the peddler was headed the same way they were.
Well, don't mind if we do. My name's Preacher. These 2 are 3 Sleeps Norris and Antoine Revier.
Pleased to meet you. I go by Tin Man, but my name's really Morris Larson.
You know, if you don't mind me saying so, them goods of yours looks like something bound for Santa Fe.
They was. I just came from there. I got turned away, you see.
Well, how's that, Tin Man? I thought those Mexicans was all fire hot for American goods.
They are, usually. Only lately, things aren't so cordial for Americans. Not since the Texicans won their independence back in 36.
Well, that's old news and didn't have anything to do with us Americans. What's got into them now to get riled at our people?
Didn't you hear? For the last couple of years, there's been talk about the Texicans wanting to join up with the United States. And the folks in Washington City are pushing for them to do it. You can see how that don't sit well at all with the Mexicans.
Is that a fact?
They made camp late in the afternoon. Around coffee, after ample plates of fatback and beans and broiled grouse provided by Antoine with his delicate, slender-barreled shotgun, Tin Man Larson studied his fellow travelers.
If you don't mind, I surely don't wish to pry, but would you tell me how you got that name? 3 Sleeps?
Well, it ain't nothing much. It happened a long time ago.
Well, no, really. I'd like to know. I collect nicknames and the stories behind them. It's something to pass the long hours shared with others along the trading path.
Well, 3 Sleeps is too modest to brag on himself, but I'll be happy to enlighten you.
Well, appreciate it.
Well, it happened a long time ago. Three Sleeps was a youngster then, hardly old enough to wet his throat with whiskey. But as it happened, he was doing just that one fine day when this known brawler slammed into the trading post where young Archibald Norris, that's old Three Sleeps here, he stood at the bar. Now, as it happened, this bear-wrestling lout was spoiling for a fight. Hadn't thumped on anyone for a couple days, he's feeling out of sorts. So he eyes Arch and says, "Who let this skinny little puke in here?" Now, Arch happened to be real sensitive about his size at the time. He turns to face, what was his name?
Travers. Meat Hook Travers.
Yep, that's the very one, Meat Hook Travers. Anyhow, old Meat Hook stomped up to the bar while young Archibald here formed the words he would say. Meat Hook thumped Arch on the chest and hollers at the barkeep, "Somebody answer me!" Arch had his words all gathered up by then, and he says, "I brought myself in on my own two legs, and I reckon I can leave the same way." Now, for Meat Hook, that was flat out too hard to chew on, let alone swallow. So he rears back and says, "You'll go out of here on a plank." And that's where old Meat Hook got a big surprise. I mean, young Archie coming him like a buzzsaw. He walked up Meat Hook with his fist and down the other side, booted that tub of muscle and lard in the butt. When Meat Hook turned around, Arch mashed his lips with a solid left. Or was it a right, Arch? Never mind, anyway. He moved fast as a wasp with a busted nest. I mean, quick and sneaky, too. Landed 5 punches for everyone Meat Hook connected. And Meat Hook tried to catch him in a bear hug. Man, Arch was having none of that. He danced back and kicked Meat Hook in the belly. Wham! Well, brother, that did it. Meat Hook sank to his knees and Arch waded in. When he got done, Meat Hook was stretched out on the dirt floor, colder than an iced over lake. Arch rubs his sore knuckles and steps back to the bar, and the bartender eyes him and says, "You'd best put some distance between the two of you." Old Three Sleeps looks back at him and says, "Not a problem. I think I'll just finish my whiskey and have a little brew first." And the bartender says, "He'll come after you for sure." And Archie swallows down his whiskey first, and then he looks at him and says, "There's plenty of time to make tracks. Way I see it, he's good for about 3 sleeps. By damn if the name didn't stick. I know for certain it happened that way because I was the only witness besides the barman.
Slack-jawed, Morris Lorson stared into the fire. He didn't know for all his experience at collecting names and legends if he was having his leg pulled or not. Then something that had been nagging at him all day went off in his head. He looked up at Preacher.
"Are you the same Preacher who single-handed cleaned a nest of thieves and cutthroats out of a trading post saloon a decade ago?"
"Oh, friends, it's been at least a dozen saloons I've cleaned out by myself. Not to count the engines I've fit and the personal squabbles with other mountain men. You got the right one, sure enough, even if your claims for me are a mite more modest than some."
"And it's a pleasure to be counted among your associates, if only for a short while. And I have me a new nickname and the story behind it. I'm obliged."
"And I'm forgetting some shut-eye. Daylight comes mighty fast in these parts."
Along about what Preacher judged to be 10:30 in the morning, he and his partners parted company with Tin Man Lorson. They spurred their mounts and rode ahead, to soon lose him from sight over a ridge. Shortly after that, Preacher began to pick up sign of an engine presence. A trim, decorated eagle feather stuck an inch or two above the ridge to the south. A tiny puff of dust drifted upward suddenly from beyond the swale to the north. Preacher reined in abruptly and dismounted. His friends did likewise. After a quick look around, they formed a close square with their mounts and the pack horse. Antoine cut his eyes to Preacher.
"I noticed them too, mon ami."
A second later, a small party of engine warriors broke the southern horizon and thundered down toward the white men behind the improvised barricade.
"Kiowa, watch your backsides, Three Sleeps!"
Preacher sighted in with his rifle. Quickly, Preacher reloaded. He changed his point of aim. Beside him, Antoine fired his trusty .36 caliber squirrel rifle. Behind them, three sleeps Norris downed another warrior with a gut shot.
You were right, Preacher. They're coming from the north now.
But then Preacher and Antoine had reloaded. It would be their last rifle shot for this charge, they knew. Preacher split a buffalo hide shield and shattered the forearm behind it. The warrior ignored it, his left arm flopping uselessly amid a shower of blood. Antoine ended the life of another savage with a ball through the throat. Then Preacher drew one Walker Colt. Preacher's barrage was an intimidating sight, and the Kiowa had had enough. They quickly galloped out of range.
They'll be back.
Several minutes passed in an eerie silence. Then the Kiowa came again, this time from the east. Preacher had counted 20 warriors at the outset. Now four lay dead on the ground and three had been severely wounded. That left a baker's dozen. Three men took aim. Now it was a baker's 10. Still the engines would not leave off. Their blood was up, but with their friends killed or wounded, they badly wanted those white scalps. Once again, they recoiled from the blaze of Preacher's six-shooters. Running Bull couldn't understand it. He wondered if he had run into a party of Texas Rangers. He knew of no others who possessed the fast-shoot hand rifles. From the reverse slope of the rise to the east, he studied the besieged white men with keen eyes.
They are only three. How could they kill so many so quickly?
A quick glance left and right showed his warriors poised for another attack. He also detected signs of nervousness. They too could count.
This time we do not turn away. Ride over them. Wet your lances in their blood. Are we women that three frail white men can stop us?
Sacre bleu! Here they come again!
Antoine raised his rifle to take aim. At extreme range, Preacher sighted in with his hawk and put a ball in the chest of a warrior, piercing the right side. Undaunted, the Kiowa raised his lance and charged on. Preacher set aside the .56 caliber rifle and put the slender buttstock of his French Lamar to shoulder. Finally made .36 sporting arm had served him well before. Now he honed the sights in on the face of his enemy. At once, the Kiowa's lance sailed skyward, and he did a back roll off his laboring pony. Preacher reloaded swiftly, only to be caught with a ramrod down the barrel of his Lamar when the distance between him and the warriors closed to less than 20 feet. He lowered the muzzle against Thunder's heaving flank and drew the reloaded Walker Colt. Still, the Kiowa charged.
Shit!
A lance thudded into the ground so close to his leg, Preacher felt the pressure of the shaft. Preacher bolstered the Colt and drew the second. That finally broke their spirits. The quick count showed Preacher that only five remained alive.
Whew, stubborn. Plain damn stubborn. They could have quit a long time ago. I'd have been willing. What about you?
Oui, without a doubt.
Well, we best be moving on. We don't want them to work up the spit to make another try.
But the engines didn't return, and one fine afternoon, 3 days later, found Preacher and his two friends riding along the trail with the sparkling waters of the Arkansas River to their right. Chubby barrel cactus and wicked-tipped Spanish bayonet abounded on the rolling sand hills ahead of them. Abruptly, Preacher raised his hand for a halt. They had all heard the gunshots, and they had halted to try to make out what they meant. With the recent Kiowa attack fresh in their minds, Preacher and his companions suspected a war party. Preacher decided a moment later, when the rate of fire escalated, that it either had to be a large group under attack or both sides had firearms. This country didn't lack for human trash that would prey on the law-abiding. Preacher drew his revolver. Antoine and Three Sleeps loosened pistols in the holster slung over their saddle horns. Dust mingled with powder smoke had risen high enough to be clearly seen before they topped the next round of dune.
Hold on! Let's not blunder in, boys. I'll take a peek first.
Preacher removed his floppy summer hat and approached the ridge in a crouch. Slowly, he raised his head. A moderate-sized freight wagon train came into sight first. Preacher raised up a little higher and focused on some 20 white renegades, several of whom fired on the teamsters from an outcropping of boulders south of the trail. Others milled back and forth on horseback, apparently prevented from circling front or rear of the caravan due to concentrated fire at those points.
Looks to me like those freighters could use a little help.
Quickly, Preacher returned to the others and explained the situation. Mounted again, he led the way up and over the ridge. Pistols in hand, they dashed down on the unsuspecting outlaw. The surprise arrival of three more fighting men cleared four of the 10 saddles before the bandits knew that help had come for the Teamsters. Now the Teamsters began to rally.
Give them hell, boys! There's help on the way! Come on, ye soldier boys!
Those of the outlaws who could whirled away and ran a murderous gauntlet along the length of the stationary wagon. Those afoot in the rocks turned and tried to make a stand. Preacher sighted in on one and reined sharply. Shot through the mouth, the highwayman fell backward in an awkward sprawl. Preacher emptied the last round from the Colt into the stomach of another hard case. He changed weapons quickly and sought another target. To his left came increased resistance. Preacher gave it right back. Several more outlaws went down in withering fire. Ahead of Preacher, wounded men crawled toward their horses, desperate to escape. Churned up dust began to obscure the scene. Preacher turned Thunder and sprinted to the head of the wagon train. At the lead wagon, Preacher saw half a dozen highwaymen spurring frantically until they disappeared beyond the next swell. A big, red-faced man came out from between two wagons and walked Preacher's way. He was a bull of a man with bulging muscles and ham hands. When he spoke, his mouth became a black hole in his heavily bearded face.
Right on time, lads, that ye are. Good work. Sure, and where's the soldiers you're scouting for?
Preacher gave the man a curious look.
At Jefferson Barracks. We haven't joined up with them as yet.
Well, you mean there's only just the three of you?
That's right.
Well, truth is, you fight like a whole company of soldiers. They call me Big Tom McLaughlin. This here's me strong right arm, Brian O'Shea, and we're obliged to you.
Preacher gave him a nod.
Big Tom, Brian, it's my pleasure. I answer to Preacher, and these be Three Sleeps Norse and Antoine Revier. Any idea why those road agents picked your train to raid?
None that makes sense. What we're hauling is too heavy to take off on horseback, and these wagons would leave a trail a blind man could follow. I figure that... Say, you ain't that Preacher, are you? The one in the Penny Dreadfuls?
Yeah, to my eternal torment, I'm him. The foolishness them idiot writers can dream up would gag a damn maggot. What you read in them things ain't true at all.
Sure, and I don't buy him. But you are a genuine legend in your own time. A living hero you are. We'd be overjoyed to have you join us in our trading expedition. Full share for all of you. Lord knows you just earned it.
Nope. We have to push on to Jeff Barracks. I gave my word. In writing at that.
I understand contracts right enough. The least you can do is stay a spell and take supper with us. We'll lay on a right regular feast. Why, we even have a fruitcake along, all sopped up in brandy. I figured to use it to mellow the Governor General in Santa Fe. What say you, Preacher?
Well, I never could resist fruitcake, especially if it's got itself drunk.
Once they started out onto the Great Divide Basin, after long, heated debate, the wagon train ran into disaster after defeat and disaster. Mr. Ledbetter had three mules die. Accusations of selfishness flew like snowflakes in a blizzard, but it was decided to draw straws to see which two wagons would voluntarily give up a mule so that Ledbetter could keep up. Eve Billings drew one of the short straws. No sooner had that predicament been solved than another sprang up. Five precious water barrels sprang leaks or broke apart. The next day, three more became useless. With much shouting and gesticulating, the decision was made to turn back. Eve had nothing to tell her children.
Mom, are we really going home?
Only partway, Charlie.
But why?
We aren't ready to go on as yet. We need a guide. Someone who can take us out of this wilderness. Without water, the livestock will die, like Mr. Ledbetter had happen.
I want to go all the way home.
Oh, don't start on that again, Charles Ryan Billings.
Eve lifted her gaze to the horizon. She estimated they had another day of travel back to the old camp. Cloud Blanket looked over his fellow chiefs from his place in the Cheyenne Council Circle. Less than a moon ago, he would not have believed this gathering could happen. The Blackfoot had come under a white belt of truce. They had a great story to relate about a young medicine man and the power he possessed. When the council gathered, the talk quickly turned to war against the whites. That greatly disturbed Cloud Blanket, though he could not name the reason why. All he could say was this was not the time to fight the white man. Suddenly, he found the talking stick offered to him. He took it and came to his moccasins.
You say that this prophet's medicine is so strong none of you fell in the battle which was described to us?
Two moons nodded in the affirmative.
That may be so. It could also be that the whites did not carry long guns with them.
Cloud Blanket's eyes twinkled with secret knowledge. He might have seen 40 winners, he might be past his prime, but he was not ignorant. Cloud Blanket had his sources of information, and one of them had told him of the attack on the unarmed whites. He had found it odd that anyone would not carry weapons, especially since there were tribes hungry for war. Suddenly, Two Moons came to his feet.
The great prophet will come among you soon. He will show you his medicine. It is true that he cannot be killed by normal bullets. His medicine is strong, the most powerful. We have been given his shield.
I have seen far too often what the bullets of the white men can do.
Two Moons snatched up the rifle that lay beside a Cheyenne.
If you doubt me, take this. Shoot me. Go ahead. I will not be killed.
If I believed that, I would shoot you. But I have heard of such medicine before. It has always failed its user. Leave us now. The council will reach a consensus and let you know. I am but one man. My voice is not listened to as much as it once was. Perhaps you will win an ally after all.
After the Blackfoot delegation withdrew to eat and nap through the afternoon, the Cheyenne spoke heatedly about the issue. Several agreed with Cloud Blanket. It would be a bad idea to make a pact with the Blackfoot. Had they not been enemies for longer than the storyteller could remember? In the end, Cloud Blanket prevailed on that point. He lost on the other. He felt obliged to take the word to the Blackfoot. He found him in the lodge that hosted them.
Our council has come to a consensus. We will not ally with you at this time, but you can send your prophet Ironshirt. We will listen to his message.
Preacher, Three Sleeps, and Antoine spent the night at the Cottonwood Crossing on the Santa Fe Trail. There, they underwent inspection by two disreputable-looking characters. One was a Mexican with wispy strands of mustache that drooped below his jawline. His partner had wild straw hair that stuck out at all angles, buck teeth and pale, hollow cheeks. The pair slouched into the saloon of the trading post shortly after Preacher and his companions arrived. Preacher nodded in their direction.
Now there's a pair to draw to.
Three Sleeps sniffed the air.
Whew, I wonder if they know what the word bath means.
How about soap?
Way I recollect it, ain't neither of you could lay claim to being in the Every Saturday Night Club. Though I gotta admit, they got a certain ripeness about them.
For the next hour, the surly pair nursed pewter mugs of beer and paid considerable, though covert, attention to Preacher and his friends. Then they settled their tab and stomped out.
Not overwhelming sociable, were they?
I ain't gonna lose any sleep over it.
I wonder which way they're going. That's a pair that'd do a body good to keep track of.
You thinking they're trouble, Preacher?
Yeah, that I do. I could smell it on them plain as that sweat stink. I may be wrong, but I could swear I saw that tow-headed one with that bunch what attacked the freight wagons.
The next day, Preacher's group made their way eastward along the Santa Fe Trail. The trail ended at Independence, Missouri, but there were supposed to be good roads through the state, at least as far as Jefferson Barracks, Preacher had been told. 2 hours down the Santa Fe, Preacher halted. Preacher looked around.
You two hear something?
Yeah, what is that?
Beats the hell out of me!
Laboring up behind him came a six-up, a spanking bays. Foam lathered their flanks and around their collars. Seated above them, the driver sawed on the reins. Clouded in dust, the stagecoach grooves Preacher's vision.
We must be closer to Muddy Creek Crossing than I thought. Otherwise, that fellow wouldn't be running them horses like that.
Preacher turned in the saddle to watch the team draw up alongside. A scowling man, armed with a Purdy percussion shotgun, eyed the three mountain men with suspicion. Preacher removed his slouch hat and gave a cordial wave. The express guard acknowledged it with a curt nod.
Well, I guess he ain't being paid to be friendly.
You got the right of that, Preacher.
How long's it been, three sleeps, that the stage lines have had to run a guard on the coaches?
Leastwise 10 years, and it's getting worse, I'm told.
It's types like those yesterday that's behind it. Lost too easy on them.
They still have hangings, don't they?
Oh, yeah. You know, it used to be a man kept the law himself. Now with the law dogs mixed up in it, man shoots a thief, likely he'll be the one winds up in jail.
In the Black Hills of the unorganized territory, young Red Cloud refused to even listen to the emissaries of Iron Shirt. Little good it would do. Since he had not yet seen 20 winners, he would not have been listened to anyway. Oh, the elders of the council would have made a show of hearing him out, but their ears might as well be plugged with wax from a bee tree. So frustrated had he become that he jumped on his favorite pony and rode out as the council gathered to hear the message of the prophet. Red Cloud sat atop a knoll now and looked down into his village. He knew every lodge. There, the one of his friend Runner. Over close to the big drum lived White Knife. They had grown up together, hunted, then gone off to war, the best of friends. White Knife had lost a little finger to a Pawnee war club while fighting at the side of Red Cloud. Now he added his voice to those clamoring for the council to approve bringing Iron Shirt and his medicine to the Lakota. The council had decided. From the looks of it, they had gone in favor of the cursed Blackfoot and his iron medicine. From every lodge, the women brought pots and baskets of food to feast the Blackfoot men. Red Cloud's lip curled in disgust. What hurt most was his grudging admission that the time would soon come when the Lakota would have to fight the white men. But that time was not now. A week and a half had passed since their first disastrous attempt to cross the Great Divide Basin. Fear of the unknown and indecision had kept the abandoned wagon train stranded at the same small spring that had previously provided their scant water supply. Eve Billings opened her flour barrel, and a momentary bolt of panic shot through her. She could see the bottom in places. Provisions had run short for everyone. Eve knew she wasn't alone in this predicament. So many people had killed or run off the sparse game in the area, the men had to ride for miles to even get a few rabbits. She crumbled yeast into the bowl and began to add water to the flour. When she looked up, there stood Charlie.
Mom, what are we having for supper?
Fried bread with molasses and potato soup.
Again? That's what we had last night.
And the night before. Be grateful we have that. And that Mr. Tate shared his rabbits with us on Sunday.
I want meat tonight.
Well, we simply don't have any.
Oh, I could get us some. At least some rabbits. I'm a good shot, you know that, Mom. Please, let me take my rifle and go after some rabbits. I won't go far, and I know better than to shoot in the direction of the wagons.
What horse would you use? The grass is so scarce that your pony's too weak to carry you.
I can always use Jake.
A mule? And one not broken to saddle at that, Charlie? I don't think it would be safe.
I ride his back every day we're on the trail, and when I take the others out to graze. He knows me and don't mind. Really, Mom?
If you go, and mind, I said if, you would have to stay within sight of the wagons.
Mom! There aren't any rabbits within sight of the wagons. I'll be all right. After all, you said I have to be the man of the family now. So let me prove I can do it.
All right. But you take your father's pocket watch with you, and you'll be back here in 2 hours exactly, or you'll never go again.
Oh, Mom, thank you. Oh, I'll bring us rabbits, I promise. Enough we can share.
And where are your boots?
As the boy scampered off to get the watch and his rifle, powder horn, and bag of balls, Eve stood staring after him.
Charlie complaining about the lack of red meat. Little Anna with a fever and runny bowels. Could it be the water? Lord, we're nowhere near an established trail. I'm beginning to suspect that no one will ever come along to lead us out of this desolation.
2 hours later, a grinning Charlie Billings returned to the wagon train with four plump rabbits strung over Jake's neck. His slender-barreled 36 caliber squirrel rifle lay across his thighs. For all her elation over the fresh meat, Eve still noticed with irritation that Charlie had ignored his boots. He had also fastened a length of rope around his waist and slipped the shoulder straps of his overalls so that he rode bare-chested as a wild Injun.
Charles Ryan Billings, you put up the bib of those overalls right this minute. You're a scandalous sight. You look like a heathen red savage.
But look what I've got, Mom. And it was easy.
Oh, my wonderful boy. We'll share them with the Tates and the Warners.
Oh, I thought we'd smoke them and have meat for all week.
We have been gifted by others, and now we can return their generosity. I'll fix you a hind leg and a chunk of loin.
All right.
Charlie reined Jake to the right and rode to the Tate wagon. Eve nearly called him back. He had not done a damn thing about adjusting his clothing.
I swear, that boy would go buck naked if he could get away with it.
Preacher and his mountain man friends decided to spend the night in the dormitory-style hotel east of the stage station at Lost Springs. The Spanish had named the location during the Coronado expedition in the 16th century. The climate had been entirely different 300 years earlier. The springs they had located and marked with tall stakes and flags had disappeared on their return from a fateful encounter with the Pawnee. They had called them the Lost Springs. Preacher explained the reason behind his suggestion to stay over a sit-down meal in the tavern.
We're getting in a country where people get suspicious of fellers camping under the stars anymore. Makes them edgy. So we might as well start getting used to a roof overhead.
Sounds reasonable. Say, the fellow who owns this place has got himself one powerful good cook. Who would have ever thought someone way out here could do a proper souffle?
Antoine's spoon paused over the golden brown dome of the fancy corn pudding, which chose that moment to collapse. Three Sleeps couldn't contain himself. Preacher pointed at the souffle disaster with his chin.
Is it supposed to do that?
Shut up! It's the thought that counts. My papa. Now there's a man who could cook a perfect souffle.
Yeah, that's right. Your pap was a Frenchie.
He was a great cook, a chef, a master in the kitchen.
Cooking's women's work.
Not so. The world's greatest cooks are men. Why, back in the days of knights and noble ladies, women were not even permitted to serve the food, let alone cook it. My friends, you are entirely too limited in worldly experience. Now, leave me to my souffle in peace. You haven't the taste to appreciate it.
Even if it's flat.
All right, you eat it. It's ruined anyway.